In some of these cases, it's best that the final decision is actually made by a human. While AI brings a lot of autonomy, the accountability always needs to be with humans.
Welcome back to Stay Cognizant, where we bring you the ideas, people, and insights you need to stay cognizant of what's new and what's next in tech. Today, I'm joined by Vijay Narayan. Vijay is an executive vice president, the head of our manufacturing, logistics, energy, and utilities business unit here at Cognizant. Vijay has a wealth of experience in thinking about how AI impacts physical instances in places like factories and grids. And Vijay, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
At Davos, Vijay spoke about how context transforms AI from a risk into a trusted operational partner. And today we're going to go deeper into the mechanics behind that idea and talk about how Cognizant engineers context-rich AI systems that can make safe, reliable decisions across factories, logistics networks, and energy grids. We'll explore how multi-agent systems coordinate, how digital twins compress timelines, and how human judgment remains central in these high-stakes environments. Vijay, let's dive right into our first question and talk about this notion of AI when it's touching physical systems. Why does that add risk? I mean, it seems obvious, but maybe you can walk us through how that adds risk, and maybe even more so, what we have to engineer or build into systems to mitigate that risk and make it scalable in a safe way.
Yeah, see, if you see the segments which I lead, manufacturing, utilities, even energy, the oil and gas sector, right? All of them touch AI systems, all of them touch physical systems. Now, with the physical systems, what happens is safety is involved. Think about a use case like asset efficiency, right? You've got a plant and you've got a machine working, you know, you've got AI systems which can monitor them, can tell them when they should be replaced or when they should be stopped. But without context, that's going to be very dangerous, right? I mean, you could actually have an asset say that it should be stopped, and without context, it will get stopped. But what happens then is you lose the production line, right? If it's a very critical infrastructure, you could lose the production line for hours. That could mean millions and millions of dollars of loss. At the same time, if you don't stop it, you know, without the appropriate context, it could cause a hazard issue. It could cause a safety issue. It could cause millions of lives to be lost. So, you know, when you're talking about physical things, you've got to have that much more specificity of context so that something which you should avoid doesn't happen. For example, take the example of self-driving cars, right? I mean, if you see, you know, self-driving cars have been there for 20 years now, you know, John Deere, you know, Tesla, obviously, all Google, Waymo. All of Waymo, all of them have been in existence now for 20 plus years, right? But you still don't have the perfect self-driving car, which is driving on the roads without humans in the loop. And the reason for that is because it's touching physical systems.
Right.
You know, a vehicle could cause an accident just because the boundary cases are so infinite, right? I mean, you sometimes do not know the number of edge cases which could be there. And that's why when you're talking about AI, which is touching physical systems, I always see a future where humans are going to govern the entire economy, AI economy, which is going to be there. And that's going to stay for a bit, I think, just because the cost of getting something wrong is too much.
You were talking about cars, and I know that you've had this expression, AI with brakes, not AI limitless.
Yep.
And yet we're also in a world where leaders of the types of companies that Cognizant works with are being pressured to move fast. How do those two things go together?
Yeah, a lot of people always say that AI technology is like a race, right? It's a Formula One race. The faster you go, the better it is, you will win more. But I also think that the biggest accidents happen when the pace of innovation, not because the pace of innovation is very fast, but because you don't have enough brakes to actually stop in time. So I think AI is pretty similar in the sense that AI can actually do quite a few things today, but the problem which actually happens is without having the appropriate guardrails in place, it can sometimes go completely off-key. right? So the governance, the transparency, the ability to look back and understand why AI did what it did and be able to rectify, that's going to be critical, because as AI systems become a lot more sophisticated, my worry is that people's trust in them is going to go up more and more, and that's normal. But when that happens, the caution which people have today may also disappear, because people think it's always going to work right. And you may hit a boundary condition where it doesn't, right? And that's why I always say that, you know, AI is great. AI can do everything which you can think of today. Our CEO Ravi says that AI has got a jagged edge, right? I mean, it does things which we think are very difficult very easily. But then there are things which it, which we think it should be very simple to do, but it has a very tough time to do it. So I always think that you got to have that kind of ability to pump the brakes on it and be able to do it right rather than do it fast. So I always think that LLM systems are going to get more and more sophisticated, right? But bringing the context and making sure that you really, really define the edge cases, you have a shadow environment to make sure that everything is working fine and for a long period of time before you actually productionize it. These are things which enterprises need to do more and more.
So you've obviously been talking quite a bit about context and helping these LLMs and generic models know more about the environment in which they are operating. How do we know this? What are some of the failures that have taught us how important it is for these models to be context aware?
I'll probably give you an example in the utility sector, right? We have this work which we're doing with a large utilities company. Utilities company storm response is a huge thing. And we have an AI system which monitors the storm response. So, there was a storm coming and our AI systems were monitoring things. They were getting feeds from the substations. They were getting feeds from the weather forecast, even the social media feeds, emergency vehicles, whatever is happening. So it was getting feeds from everywhere. And then one of the cases which actually came up was a substation which is very close to a hospital could be impacted. And so there were multiple use cases which could come out of because of that. And our AI system fed in some of these aspects to it with different contexts and risk ratings. Like, you could completely shut down the substation, you could read out the power, and multiple other use cases which could send vehicles out there to make sure that it can get repaired in time. But we had a human in loop in that case, which actually looked at all of that. And in that particular case, they rerouted the power from the substation instead of doing something else, right? So that's what I feel is going to be important, because AI is phenomenal in terms of identifying all the use cases and what's going to happen. But then in some of these cases, it's best that the final decision is actually made by a human.
So you're starting to talk a little bit about, human in the loop, and you said something interesting before about a fear of people over-trusting AI. When you think about the leaders who you talk to, what's the biggest misconception about the autonomy of these systems that gets them into trouble when they think about using AI?
See, if you look at AI, right, while AI brings a lot of autonomy, the accountability always needs to be with humans. Mm-hmm. And I think the really good leaders understand that, because when something happens, you can't blame AI for it.
Right.
There has to
be
somebody governing it. And that's why I say that.
Well, not yet.
Yeah. there's always somebody, the transparency, the governance is going to be a very critical factor in how you put a reference architecture for AI in enterprises.
Before we get into the mechanics, let's step back. We're at a moment where AI no longer lives in dashboards or co-pilots. It's moved into factories, grids, warehouses, and physical systems where the cost of getting it wrong is very real. So let's start with the big shift. Why context suddenly becomes non-negotiable when AI moves into the physical world, and why having an AI builder can help build the bridge to enterprise value? Let's move on and talk a little bit about the way we actually build these systems. How, when you're thinking about these very complex systems that have physical aspects, digital aspects in places like manufacturing and utilities, how do you orchestrate. So it's not about individual agents that are really smart, but they're all doing things kind of in their own realms.
Yeah.
But you're actually orchestrating a system that can do some of the things you're talking about. It can monitor a lot of complex scenarios and communicate as a cohort of agents. How do you do that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I like the word which you actually used, orchestrating, right? And you think about it, it's like an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these agents create some kind of music.
And they each have a role to play.
Each have a role to play, mm-hmm. right? And each of them, it's not about what that particular agent can do, but it's about how all these agents can work together to create an outcome, right? And that's where I think the entire fun lies. I mean, just like in an orchestra, and every instrument gives a particular music. But then when you put it all together, it still can be terrible or it can be great. And that's where I think multi-agentic frameworks also come into picture. And then you have, in my view, you should really define the architecture of the agentic systems really, really well, because you should have, there are obviously observant agents which actually will observe. There will be agents which will actually execute. Then there will be agents which will actually decide. And then there are agents which will actually escalate, right? You know, putting that whole thing together and that reference architecture together for agentic AI systems, I think is going to be key, because execution is the simplest thing. But the point is, do all the agents have a common context, right? Because sometimes if you do not have the same context and different agents have different contexts, it can create very, very weird results, right? So that's going to be critical too. And then I always think that execution agents are great, the decision agents are great, but then it's the agents which actually know that something is a boundary condition and able to escalate. That's going to be the key. You have to define that really well so that you can entrust that particular agentic AI system to do things without worrying about all kinds of results.
So how do we do that, right? You've got this orchestra, you've got your different types of agents, you've got a human who's also part of that orchestra. We're monitoring the storm, we're figuring out what we're going to do. How do you decide who's a recommender, who's a worker, who's an escalator, and how do you decide when the escalation needs to happen?
And that's where I think companies like Cognizant really come into the picture, right? We consider ourselves as an AI builder, which means that LLMs are generic, right? Without context, they don't do much. But what we try to bring in is not just the LLMs, but we bring in a complete ecosystem of partners.
Mm-hmm.
We bring in the fact that we understand these industries because we have worked with them for a long time. We understand the clients because we have worked with them for a long time. And then we have these IPs and platforms which we have created. We try to put all of this together into a reference architecture for clients, because there is a big difference between AI and enterprise AI.
Yes.
Right? I mean, normally people think of AI as a ChatGPT, but that's very generic, right? I mean, it can work for everyone.
Right.
But when you talk about an enterprise, it's about what makes sense for that enterprise. And then that's what we see our role in the entire industry to be, is an AI builder. Mm-hmm. And bringing in that context, which is there in the enterprises, the platforms which we have built, the LLMs, the partner ecosystem, as well as what we understand of the industry altogether for a client to bring that particular outcome.
You talked earlier about shadow mode. I've talked to some of our other leaders about digital twins,
yeah.
and I know these are things that you use pretty extensively in your world. Why are these so essential as your scenario planning and figuring out where to grant autonomy and where not to? How do these elements help?
I mean, if you see in the past, when we had, and even today, right? I mean, when we had these large enterprise ERP programs, you used to still have a shadow mode, right? You used to have a mode where, systems used to run in parallel for 90 days, 120 days, 60 days, to make sure that the results are similar to what, it used to be in the past. So I think of AI enterprise building the same way, right? I mean, if you create, and we do this quite a bit, and I can probably quote an example. Before you productionize something, you want to make sure that it's delivering the results which you had expected for a certain period of time before you can actually productionize it. And the reason for that is to ensure that you hit as many boundary conditions as possible. And the AI system can cover those boundary conditions is going to be very critical. We work with a large HVAC manufacturer, and it's in the public domain. For manufacturing, we have created a digital twin with their emerging technologies for their entire plant layouts, right? So before creating any changes in the plant layout, structure, manufacturing lines, we actually work out the possibilities inside the digital twin. And once that is done, then only it actually gets into production. So what we have seen is obviously, you know, the cost of getting something wrong in a plant is very humongous. So we have taken out 99% of the risk, which actually is there of putting something in incorrectly or putting it something which is not the most efficient way of doing it. So we hit all the conditions and see that it is actually the best way to put in that asset or, you know, read out something. And that's been a huge, you know, cost saver as well for the enterprise. So that's what I mean. I mean, you do need to test certain things out before you actually productionize them, and that's how you do it in the AI world as well.
So I asked you earlier to share an example where a system failed.
Mm-hmm.
How about an example where putting these processes in place, defining the boundary, which you've talked about a few times, actually prevented a bad outcome from taking place?
The condition which actually I talked about with the storm response, mm-hmm. was a condition where we prevented a bad outcome, because the way I would like to think about this is in a positive sense, right? Because if you had shut down that substation, it may not have been the best outcome for that particular incident, right? I mean, what we did was because we could marry whatever the AI system was providing us along with the local conditions at that particular point of time and said that this is the right thing to do. So I think the way you should think about some of this is every outcome which is which you can prevent something happening is actually a good outcome. And what we did with the AI system in the utilities example I gave is actually a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other one which I talked about creating with our emerging technologies a digital twin of a manufacturing layout, that's again a very good outcome, right? Because you now are saving a company which used to spend millions of dollars trying out certain things in the physical world, now in the digital domain, right? And that's humongous, right? So, and there are so many such cases, right, where you can think of, you know, every case which you actually try and do, right? I mean, we've got a lot of these use cases where we are, you know, monitoring warehouses with drones and being able to find, you know, increase the efficiency of how material moves through those warehouses, what is actually available, what is not, what is actually falling low with actual physical drones monitoring the entire warehouse, right? So mm-hmm. these are things which you could not think of even 15 years back, 10
right.
years back, but these are actual outcomes which are being delivered by AI today. So, which is why I said AI is the future, but AI is the future with breaks, right?
As we look ahead, what's really striking is that nothing related to AI is about replacing people. It's about designing systems where humans and AI share responsibility and where trust is earned, not assumed. So let's close by looking forward. Let's close by looking forward a little bit. You're sitting with a CEO of one of our large companies that we work with, one of our largest clients, and they say, give me a 30, 60, 90-day plan. I want to deploy and scale AI across 10 sites. What does that make you think? What's your advice? You know, going back to this notion of people really wanting to move fast, improve ROI, what do you think there?
I think the time to move from pilots is done. I mean, I think we need to now move from doing pilots to actually productionizing use cases at mass scale, right? Even if it is one use case, you need to productionize at mass scale, because that's where the real outcome actually comes, because pilots have been done before. And if you look at what Cognizant says, I mean, we have three vectors, obviously. Vector one is all about hyper-productivity. Vector two is all about productionizing, you know, what is a pilot into an enterprise-grade AI economy inside
mm-hmm.
enterprises,
mm-hmm.
right? And vector three is obviously around agentic AI.
Definitely.
So I think that's going to be critical. So the way I would think about it is the first step, obviously, is all about data,
mm-hmm.
right? I use this term called cognitive data fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every organization needs to try and build that. And this is not a data warehouse where you have all the data. It's about, you will always have systems which are different, but how do you bring a cognitive data fabric layer which can bring all the context of a particular company into one place with accuracy and with less redundancies, right? So that's going to be step one, because if you do that, if you really think about that, that's going to get you in a great spot to actually do something. The second thing is what I have been talking about is transparency and governance. You do need to put that whole framework, reference architecture of how you're going to govern these AI systems, how it is actually going to work in the real ecosystem. The third thing which I think is going to be important is the labor pool, right? I mean, everybody needs to get upskilled. And that's going to be a key area, which is why I think the learning management space is poised for a boom, because somebody said, right, the pace of technology change is the fastest it's ever been, but it's also the slowest it's going to be, right? It's going to just get faster and faster and faster, right? I mean, you have one LLM coming tomorrow, there's going to be something else. You know, what you didn't think about was possible yesterday is going to be possible today. So how do you create a culture of change? How do you create a culture where the labor pool is constantly learning and upskilling themselves? So that's going to be the third piece. And then you start putting together the complete reference architecture, agentic AI reference architecture as to how things are going to go. But I think if I had to look at it, I would spend the first 30 to 60 days definitely getting the cognitive data fabric ready, and then try to put some thought around the transparency and governance part of it. The entire, you know, 90 days, obviously, you have to start putting in this culture of change, and it's going to be done again and again and again, right? And that's going to be something which you need to do. And then you start thinking about how, which use cases can I productionize mass scale now that I have this cognitive data fabric for at least this particular area. I have this guardrails in place. I have this reference architecture in place. Then you start building something. So I would always say that going for a proof of concept, proof of pilot is fine. But I think the companies which are going to differentiate themselves are going to be the ones which are going to mass deploy something, even if it's one use case. And that's what's happening. And that's what we are seeing a lot more now.
So the hype is getting a little more focused.
It has to. Yeah. It has to, yeah.
So 5 years from now, there are going to be some companies who have tried to do what you just talked about, and they're going to succeed and scale. There are going to be other companies that are going to end up taking on too much risk or not mitigating risk appropriately, and they're going to stall, maybe not fail, but they're at least going to be behind. Yeah. I'd love to ask you, one, what's the difference between those two companies?
Yeah.
And two, how is Cognizant, you talked about Cognizant as an AI builder, how is that mentality and that model that we have really uniquely suited to help the companies that are going to succeed?
See, I think of it this way, right? Every company, successful companies also have some things which make them special, which I call the good DNA of the company, because there are certain work graphs, there are certain institutional knowledge, there are certain regulatory compliances, and the culture of that particular organization which makes them special. Now, when you use AI, I think the role of good leaders and what will make enterprises successful is to be able to enhance that good DNA using AI, to be able to do the same thing which they are doing really well now, but better, right? And then there will be certain things which they don't do all that well, and that's always there, right? I mean, there's going to be, in their culture, there are certain things which don't happen the way best-in-class companies do, and that I call the bad DNA. Now, the role of AI is to level off that bad DNA so that you are at least at par with most companies in the bad DNA. So you basically amplify the good DNA of a company and then level off the bad DNA of a company. And that's what's going to make companies really successful, because companies are successful today because of something which is very special about them, the way they either work, the aggressiveness, their innovativeness. AI cannot level that. AI has to amplify that. Right. AI should level off the things which actually, the bureaucracy sometimes in a company, because it's become too big, those are things which actually, if they level off with AI, then it becomes, you can actually exponentially grow. So that's where I think the differentiation is going to lie. The good companies are going to amplify their good DNA and go forward using AI and be able to predict better, give it better insights and be able to respond to them better. The companies which may fall off are the ones who are too late to adopt this change. I think everybody is going to adopt it at some point of time, because otherwise there's no other way. I mean, think about this way, right? And I quoted this before. AI is going to become is going to be everywhere, right? If you remember 20, 30 years back, the internet, you used to log on to internet and used to dial off internet. Now, internet is pervasive. Right, there's no thinking about, is the internet, do I need to log on to internet? It's everywhere. It's on your phones, it's on your tablets,
it's on your watch,
it's everywhere, right? I mean, so I think AI is going to become similar. It's going to become pervasive. It's not something which you log on to and say that I do this and come back.
Right.
It's going to be in your everyday life. It's going to be in your, possibly your glasses. It's going to be in your watches. It's going to be everywhere, right? So it's going to happen. Companies will adapt to it. It's a question about who has the first mover advantage. And that's where I think we bring in that whole AI builder mentality, that we have built these platforms, we have built these partnerships, we have built this ecosystem, and we understand the industries we work with, we understand the clients we work with. So we think that we are in a place where we can help enterprises make that leap to be the first movers in this particular space.
Last question for you. What does great leadership look like in this era?
I think it's about adapting to change. Because and that actually means that leaders, I think there was a study which we did recently, which said that 60-65% of the CXOs now are AI, not just AI aware, they actually know a lot about AI, right? Yeah. Because, and that's what I think leadership starts from, that you have to be ready to change, and that means that you have to lead that change, right? And the second part of it is, I always think that the good leaders know what works for their particular organization well, which is a good DNA, and be able to put a path to actually move that forward faster. And then finally, it's about the entire organization's human labor. I mean, how fast are you going to be able to upskill them to be the guardians of tomorrow rather than the guardians of what is the legacy? That's going to mean a lot of change. It's going to mean being very uncomfortable in the short term, because everybody doesn't like change. Nobody likes change, right? And that's going to be important that you make yourself uncomfortable in the short term so that you can actually be really successful in the long term.
What we've heard today is that scaling AI in complex industries isn't about removing humans or accelerating blindly. It's about engineering context into every layer, data, agents, governance, and culture, so AI can operate safely and predictably in the real world. And it's about building AI with proprietary platforms, tools, workflows, and people, so you can really create the bridge to value. Vijay, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back soon with more on how Cognizant is helping organizations turn emerging technologies into meaningful progress. We'll see you next time on Stay Cognizant.